Welcome to Career Tours. This week, how to succeed in jobs at college. The questions this cast answers are, how do I make the most of the paid work I do while I'm in college? How can I be successful at a part-time job? And how can I get work experience before I leave college?
Finally, after years of waiting, The Effective Manager in book form is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your other retail booksellers, as well as signed copies are available on our website, manager-tools.com. If you want to know the basics of how to manage others effectively in book format, including Kindle and ebook format as well, we encourage you to buy, read, and then implement the guidance in The Effective Manager.
So, Danny, we've been doing giving some guidance on college students or for college students for a little while now.
Yes.
And we've told them that they have to keep up their grades and that's really, you know, the reason that you're in college is to get your grades. But for some people, they have to work. For some people, they want to work. And that can give you valuable experience as well. And sometimes it gives you cash, and sometimes it gives you cash and purpose. It can make you, it can give you something that you feel like you're winning at sometimes when college work is hard. And it will also be stuff that you can include on your resume. But if you really want to benefit from this job, then you need to be successful at it. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
I just love this topic, Wendy. I am always so impressed when I talk to college students or college graduates and they tell me about how they worked in school. I don't know, it could just be because I'm getting older, but it seems to be less and less common. I know it's definitely less common for kids in high school because I've seen the data that indicates fewer high school kids are working. I don't know if it's true for college, but it certainly feels that way to me when I talk to students. But I'll tell you, when it comes to hiring people, I will take a kid who, even if he got less good grades, but worked his way through school every day of the week. So
yeah,
there's a lot to be said for it. I would assume, Wendy, too, that our guidance here doesn't only pertain to paid work. This also pertains to unpaid work, like an internship.
Absolutely.
Or volunteer work.
And volunteer work, anything that you're doing for the benefit of someone else, basically. And it also doesn't apply just to college graduates. It's anybody who is, I don't know, maybe under the age of 22, 23, and who is working at anything that benefits somebody else.
Cool.
So we just called it that, so to give people an idea with a short title. Otherwise, all my titles would be three lines long.
Which is hard to read on my iPhone.
Exactly. So our outline is show up early and stay late, work fast, be nice, over-communicate, and be selfish.
I can't wait to talk about that one because when I first read the show notes, I thought, is that a typo? Maybe it was supposed to say be selfless. And no, it is not a typo for those of you who are reading show notes.
So we're going to start with show up early and stay late.
Yeah, whenever we give this recommendation, this guidance, we often hear comments like, oh, don't give the employer any more than what they're paying you for, or, you know, why should I stay late? I'm not getting paid for those extra minutes. Just keep your head down and do the bare minimum, kind of those kind of comments, right? And that's one of those, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Wendy, reductio ad absurdum. Did I say
yes.
That correctly?
I think that's the way Marx says it.
6 years of Latin paid off. It's not a valid argument. We're certainly not saying that unpaid overtime is a good thing, right? We're not advising people to go and work a bunch of hours that they're not going to get paid for.
No. What we're saying is be early enough that when your shift starts, you are in a position to start working. So if you need to have certain things ready in order to be ready to work, then you want to have those things done before your shift starts. And too many people scoot in a minute after their shift starts and then have to bustle around getting their badge and their apron, getting a handover, entering their password, you know, all sorts of things that you have to do at the beginning of a shift or at the beginning of a day. And then they start work 15 minutes later. And you've lost that 15, the company has lost that 15 minutes of productivity. You've lost that 15 minutes of productivity. And if somebody said you're late, you go, oh, it's only a minute. But it's not really a minute. It's like 15 minutes.
Right, because you're not ready to start working.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And this gives a really poor impression, not just to your employer, to your boss, but to the customers. If you're in a customer-facing role, you know, customers notice that type of stuff. Tim and I eat out a lot, and I often see it with restaurant servers. And I worked in a restaurant while I was in school, and I was guilty of that. Oh, my shift doesn't start until 10 o'clock, and I would walk in at 10 o'clock. I stupidly, because I was young, thought that time that I was spending getting logged onto the computer, getting my apron ready, or all that, like, I thought, well, that's work. Right. But if a customer came in at 10 o'clock, I was not ready to serve them, which does not look good to the customers. But worse than that, it's bad for you. You start your shift in a little bit of a tizzy. You're feeling that rush. You're trying to switch mindsets, getting into gear for work, getting ready, listening to what you need to know for the day, thinking about, you're probably still thinking a little bit about the stuff that you left at school or home. It's hard to do that kind of mental shift in that moment of all of the stuff that you're trying to get ready to start work. So, you know, why not have 10 minutes beforehand? Get there 10 minutes early so that you can get clocked in and get ready. And that way, when your shift starts at 10, you're ready to go, right? That way, regardless of how hectic the rest of the day gets, you will have started well. And when you start well, I think it increases the chances that you're going to have a good day.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the best thing about this is you automatically become a better employee. It's like magic. It's one of the big secrets of work, I think, that I didn't know until way later and wished I had knew. It's a small extra effort in a few places. If your employer knows that they can rely on you to be ready at the moment that your shift starts, then you're the person who starts to get better shifts.
Yes.
You're the person who gets better recommendations from customers or better recommendations from your employer when you want a reference because you're applying for a full-time job later. And it makes the better people want to work with you. The people who are really good at work, the people who are very productive, and the people that management holds up as superstars, they don't want to work with the laziest person. They don't want to work with the people that are, you know, just half there or just there because, you know, they want the paycheck at the end of the week. But the best people want to work with other good people because it's fun to them. It's an achievement to get to the end of the shift and to have served 200 customers or whatever. And they want the team that they were doing that with, they want everybody to be working together. And so if you want to work with those people, and why wouldn't you, you've got to put in some effort. And being 10 minutes early is a really small amount for the amount of reward that you get. And if you have this habit now, you'll keep it throughout your career, and it will pay off every single time.
Absolutely. And if you're in a situation, if you're in a job or in the type of organization or company where you need to have some conversation with the person handing off to you, like when I waited tables, sometimes during some shifts, the shift change didn't happen always in between meal times. And so sometimes we'd be handing off a table from one of us to another. You don't want to be the one who's coming in, you know, right at the start of your shift when your colleagues are have been working for 8 or 10 hours and they're ready to go home. And now they have to, you know, stand around and wait that extra 10 or 15 minutes in order to do that handoff. And you're not really paying attention because you're still logging in or clocking in or trying to find a clean apron or whatever. And so, yeah, you get a reputation pretty quickly. Along the same lines, Wendy, when it's time to clock off, when it's time to go home, take a couple of extra minutes and make sure that your work area or the things that need to be done are ready for the next person, that the supplies are refilled. the ketchup bottles are filled, or
sugar,
the sugar, or the silverware is rolled, or, you know, if you're working reception at a hotel, that you've straightened up the reception desk and put the pens back in the pen holder, and the tape is full and the stapler is full, that type of thing. Check all of that before you leave. Again, leaving work for other people who are coming in behind you is a really quick way to get a reputation of that people do not want to work with you.
And if people don't want to work with you, those shifts start disappearing.
That's right.
That's how rostering works. It's not fair. It's based on what's the best thing for the manager, and the best thing for the manager is having people who get on with each other and do the work. So the next one is work fast. And we're not suggesting that you work at superhuman speed every day. We're not saying rush around. We're not saying wear yourself out and be exhausted at the end of the shift. You don't want to exhaust the people around you by, you know, just being that with all that hectic energy. But we're saying don't work lethargically. Don't be frustrating to the co-workers, your employer, your customers by working at a really slow pace that makes them wait or causes extra work. And, you know, everybody's seen it when you can go anywhere. I went to McDonald's recently and, oh, this teenager was moving. He looked like a bear that just woken up from winter. It's like, I need 70 million coffees. And I was just irritated by it. And I didn't want him to work, you know, like some speeded up computer game. I just wanted him to work as fast as a normal person works.
And I think, Wendy, I think it's totally reasonable, because the speed at which you are working is a proxy for your competence, right?
Yeah.
People assume that if you're doing something at a fast pace, that you must be pretty good at it. Because think about it, every time you see somebody do something for the first time, they're probably a little hesitant, or they go back and they repeat certain steps, or they check their paperwork a couple of times. Those are the things that you see the person doing that lead you to conclude, oh, this person isn't competent yet. And then your confidence in them falls, right? I'm sure you were thinking, oh, this, my order is probably going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The guy at McDonald's. And I think not only does it lead people to conclude things about your competency, but I also think it sends a message about your enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're just walking around real slow and lethargic, the conclusion people bring is you're not enthusiastic. You don't want to be here.
And if you don't want to be here, that's fine. I won't pay you to be here.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah. And again, we're not talking, you know, double speed video, robot fast, but fast enough that people can clearly see that you're pulling your weight, that you're doing the work, that you're not just, oh, hey, if I go really slow, I have to, you know, I get away with doing less work, and that people see that you're good at what you do.
Yes. And we also don't want you to go faster than your actual competence. We're not saying go so fast that you make mistakes.
Oh,
if you're making mistakes because you're going too fast, then you're not adding anything to the team. In fact, you're detracting from how everybody's doing. So go as fast as you can without making mistakes, and no faster. And for most people, that's faster than super slow. And we draw all sorts of conclusions about people going super slow, like they're lazy and no fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be that person.
All right. Our next recommendation is be nice, which it just reminds me of the movie Roadhouse.
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Patrick Swayze is a bouncer at a nightclub, and he's going over the rules with his team, with the guys, right? The other bouncers. I guess he's not a bouncer. He's a cooler, which is the head bouncer. And he says, rule number one is be nice. So I always think, you know, if a bouncer who's dealing with drunk, annoying people can be nice.
I can too.
The reason, besides just that Patrick Swayze said it in Roadhouse, is until you got to college, you probably didn't meet that many people who weren't very much like you, right? If you're in a school where grades are very important, or where it's cool to be in scouts, or where all the cool kids are in drama, where families tend to be financially pretty comfortable. If you're around a lot of people who are similar, then you're probably similar to them as well. This is one of the ways that college can be a little bit of a shock, because there's people from very different backgrounds as you. They have different goals and aspirations. They have different experiences. They have different goals in life, right? They're just going to be very different. For a lot of us, that experience of going to college is the first time that we are around a lot of people who are not like us. And then when you add on to that a job, you're going to meet even more people, an even broader range of people, people who might not even be in college or haven't gone to college, people who don't share the same values or beliefs, people who think that being in drama is kind of geeky, or for me, it was band, right? Like, where I went to school, being in band was kind of cool. And then I went to college and people were like, no, band is very geeky, right? People who have very different worldviews than yours. And of course, you're going to probably meet a lot of angry and frustrated customers, as well as the nice ones.
And so all those things can add up to people it's hard to be nice to. If somebody has some big difference to you, there's a natural thing that the human beings are built in a way that when we see anybody, we ask ourselves, is this person a threat or not? And part of the way that our subconscious works that out is, are they like me or not? If they're like me and they're in my tribe, then they're not a threat. If they're different to me, then they might be a threat. And so then it can be hard to be nice to those people. So there's all these people that you're meeting that are different to you. And so what we're saying is, be warned, be aware of that. There's nothing you can do to help the fact that your brain says threat or not. Like, it's just biological. It's like breathing. You can't not do it. But what you can do is make an effort to be nice to those people or to everyone.
Just because your brain says, oh, this person might be a threat, doesn't mean you have to treat them that way.
Exactly. And it's absolutely a learned skill. You don't have to be a people person. You don't have to be a naturally friendly person. You don't have to be one of those people who's really flexible on their views and wants, you know, everyone to get along together. You can be like me. You can be a high D and just want people to get out of your way. And you can still exhibit the behaviors that are being nice. And if it's not natural to you, that's okay. You can learn it along with me. And being pleasant and being a pleasant person to work with is like showing up early and staying late. It's a small thing. And if it's really unlike you, you may have to put some effort in, but it will get easier. And then it's a very small thing to turn on that kind of I'm working with people mode. And that pleasantness, that niceness pays off. Because again, people want to work with you and that brings you all sorts of benefits.
And again, Wendy, it's just behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the easiest, I know when I do our effective communications conference every week, one of the things I tell people, particularly the high D's like you and I and the high C's like Mike in the room is, if you want to immediately be more effective with the world, particularly people who are not like you, is to smile. Because those of us that are high D's and high C's in the DISC model, we are not natural smilers. We don't walk around smiling, unlike my husband, who I don't think ever stops smiling. Even when he's mad at you, he'll smile.
That's true.
I have RBF. My resting face is not a smiling face. But you can learn to smile. It's just a behavior. You don't have to be happy to smile. In fact, there's pretty good science that says smiling can actually make you feel happier, even if you don't, right? So you can learn, and it makes a huge difference. Again, and particularly in these customer-facing roles that a lot of college students end up in. But even if you're not customer-facing, smiling at your coworkers makes you more pleasant and makes people want to be around with you. If you can learn to drive, you can learn to smile. And it will become like when you're driving and you don't even think about moving your foot from the gas to the brake. You just do it automatically. Smiling can often, if you do it enough, can become second nature.
Yeah. Okay, something else you can do to be nice is assume positive intent.
Oh, this one is so big, Wendy.
Yeah, it's huge. But nobody gets up with the intention of ruining the day for everyone around them. Like, no,
what?
You know, maybe someone who has had a really bad day and wants vengeance. But those people are few and far between, and it's mainly, you know, maybe one day in a lifetime. But for the vast majority of people, the vast majority of the time, they got up in the morning thinking, I hope today is a good day, or I want today to be a good day. No one deliberately makes mistakes that make your life harder. They don't. Even the DMV, like, they don't actually get up in the morning and go, I'm going to ruin everybody's day by forgetting to tick this box, and so nobody will actually get a driving license. They don't do it. They actually want to go to work and do a good job. And nobody changes their personality with the express intention of winding you up or rubbing you up the wrong way. They just don't. That's their personality. And every time you get in a situation where you could think that somebody is making a deliberate effort to do something irritating, then assume that person has positive intent, right? If the person at a reception, when you're trying to check in at a hotel, is just not concentrating and is being really slow and keeps saying, hold on a minute or whatever, assume that that person is doing their best at that job at that moment. Because then you see someone who is, you know, a bit frantic, is maybe there should be two of them and they're doing it on their own, or maybe they're new and it's the first time they've been left alone. And there's all these reasons for them to be doing that behavior. And if you think about those reasons, you feel much more kindly to them. You know, I'm the kind of person who gets irritated really easily, and that would irritate me. But if I think, oh, if this person is at their first shift and they really are feeling like a fish out of water, then I immediately feel more sympathy towards them and I can be nicer to them.
Absolutely. I read a quote recently and it said, I'm probably going to mangle it, and it said something like, I can't ever know if people are doing the best they can or not, right? You really can't know that. But the quote went on to say, but I know that when I assume that they are doing the best they can, it makes my life better.
Yeah, that is so true.
Very true. Yeah.
Okay, over-communicate is next.
Oh my gosh. We promise, when you get to be 30 or 40 or 50 or 100, you will still be under-communicating. We all do. We all assume that because we know something in our heads that everybody else knows it too, which just, I mean, it's absolutely crazy that we think that, but I find myself thinking that all the time. I find myself having experiences all day. And by the end of the day, when I'm talking to, you know, to you, Wendy, or to a friend or somebody, in my head, I'm like, oh, well, they know what happened to me today. I have no idea where that comes from. And it's when I stop and think about it, I'm like, that is so crazy. Why would I think that? Or I'll read something, you know, on Facebook or something, and I'll just assume, oh, you know, my friend saw that too. I don't know where that comes from. Although with Facebook, it's usually true that everybody has seen it by that point, right? But as an example, if you call into work to tell them that you're not going to make it in that day because you have schoolwork to do and the schoolwork is due today, you probably assume that they know that you're a good student, you're conscientious, that you had planned your time well, but there was something unforeseen that came up, and that means you have to get your work done that day, and so you can't come to work. And this could not be further from the truth. When you call in at the last minute because you have to do schoolwork, here's what your boss is thinking. I can't believe you're letting me down. I can't believe I have hired somebody and I have somebody here working for me who can't manage their time, who would put his colleagues out by calling in the last minute, put me out calling at the last minute. Really, he doesn't take this job seriously at all. I don't know why I even employ college students. That's it. When he finally gets here, I'm going to fire him. Now, that's a pretty big leap from, hey, I can't make it in today because I have to get a paper done. You have to give the boss credit. Some of her thoughts are probably valid, right? No matter how you ended up in this situation, you are still letting your team down. If you're calling in the day of your shift, you are giving notice that's too short. But your boss doesn't know all of the circumstances that led up to it, or your boss doesn't know that you had planned to work on that paper on Saturday morning, but you had to go home unexpectedly because somebody was sick or whatever, or there was a funeral or any number of things, right? And if you don't give your boss that information and you just expect that they know all of that, then you're really setting yourself up to not have a great relationship to your boss, with your boss. And while it's still not the best to call in at the last minute and tell your boss you can't be there, explaining what has happened it definitely takes a lot of the sting out of that situation for your boss. There's been so many occasions where my directs have called to give me some bad news about something, and I'm human just like everybody else, and my first reaction is, ugh. And then when they tell me, you know, why, it's like, okay, well, like, stuff happens. It's life.
Yeah. Okay?
It's still frustrating, and now we have to do, you know, X, Y, or Z to move it around, but, you know, sometimes you understand, like, that stuff just happens.
Let's give everybody another example. Let's imagine that you're working at the front desk of a hotel. Wow, this person works a lot. The line gets long, and you are working as fast as you can, but one customer is getting super annoyed, so you quickly key the card, you know, the plastic cards that you have now to open hotel rooms. They have to be programmed by the receptionist. And so you do that, and you think, I'll log him into the system in a minute. And of course, the hectic carries on, and it comes to change your shift, and you're thinking, right, I've got to get out of here. I'm going to work on that project. So-and-so wants to go for a drink at 8 o'clock. And so you don't expressly tell the person that you're working with that that person has taken that room, and you just assume that they're going to read your notes and understand them. And then later you find out that your replacement allocated the room to a new customer, and then there's an embarrassing incident when the two customers meet in the same room.
Oh, it's the worst. So uncomfortable.
It absolutely happens. But a little bit more communication, a willingness to stay 5 extra minutes to make sure that either you sort that situation, you fix it, or you tell your replacement expressly, hey, 416, there is somebody in there. I've kept the card. Here's their details.
Which means you have to talk to each other. You have to talk to people.
Yeah. It's not enough to leave a note and assume that somebody will work it out. You have to spell it out. And you have to communicate in a way that allows you to check that they've understood. So face-to-face is best because you can see the confusion on someone's face, or you can see that they're kind of not quite there with you and they aren't really listening and hearing what you're saying. And you can do it by phone. It depends, you know, it depends on the situation. Most jobs that I ever did when I was in those college years, somebody was coming in to take over from me.
Right.
But, you know, if a phone, it works, it works. But you do have to actually talk to each other. You have to do that communication. None of us have worked out yet how to do a Vulcan mind meld. So talking is required.
Sometimes, unfortunately. And our last one is not a typo. It's not supposed to say be selfless. It is be selfish. Now, after all of that we've talked about making it easy for other people to work with you, this seems counterintuitive, right? Why would we tell you to be selfish? But really, acting in this way, doing these things that we've laid out, is a selfish act. Because if you do all of these things, your day will go more easily. Work will be more rewarding. You will feel better about the job you did. And it's definitely more satisfying to know that you have worked a solid shift, that you've done a good job, you've contributed to the team, and that you have done what you need to do to leave them in a good shape to take over after you, than to waste 4, 6, or 8 hours. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to not do a job well. I think it takes as much energy to not as it does to do it well. And even the most kind of rote jobs, the least exciting, processing paperwork, even those have an inherent satisfaction when you know you're doing them well. There is no work that has to be without dignity. Any work can have dignity to it, I think, depending on how we do it.
Yeah, when one of the jobs I had, I worked for a brewery, and they were doing a special promotion for all their pubs. And so there were 412 pubs, which for some reason I remember very specifically, and each of them had to get an information packet, and someone had to photocopy all those information packets and make sure that the right papers were in there. And that's what I did for 3 weeks straight, just photocopy and put packets together. And, you know, they ended up being lined up in a hallway for some reason. I don't remember what was happening, but that was my job. My job was to put them in the hallway and once they were done. And just to walk down there and see 412 of these packets laid out was like, I did a good job there. And all I was doing was photocopying. It really wasn't hard. But there's something satisfying about just seeing it done.
Absolutely. And no matter how menial the job is, making photocopies of 400 packets, I mean, that sounds pretty mind-numbing, you're still learning valuable skills. If your job is to make 400 packets and just stand there and photocopy, you still have to have an attention to detail to make sure you make the right number of copies and you're putting the packets together in the right order, and you're putting the right number of copies in each packet. If your job is to file hundreds and hundreds of paper files in the law firm library, again, you have to be paying attention. That's fairly simple, but it requires a lot of precision. And you're learning how to power through stuff that you don't want to be doing. Learning how to do stuff that's boring and monotonous and still do it well is definitely a skill that will serve you well, because when you get out of school and you're in your career that you went to school for, there will be boring and monotonous parts of your job.
Every job.
I worked for 2.5 hours yesterday on conditional formatting in an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, joy.
To me, there is nothing more boring or monotonous than that, right? So you're still learning. If you're a security guard and you work the night shift, where not a whole lot is happening, you're learning how to stay alert, how to pay attention, even when there's not a lot of stimuli coming at you. These are things that we use our whole lives and learn often in our earliest jobs.
Yeah, dealing with customers, being precise, getting to work to start on time and in the appropriate clothing are lessons that you use for the rest of your life. And I know it's really frustrating to be in that position and be saying, I don't get it, or I don't understand, like, why do I have to be 10 minutes early? You haven't convinced me. And for some old people to say, believe me, it will pay off and you'll use that skill all the rest of your life. But that's what we're telling you as old people. And there's no way we can be really more convincing about it. The better the employee you are, the better your references will be. This is another part of being selfish. If you're a good employee, you will get better references. And if you know that you can rely on getting good references, you can go for the jobs that you maybe would think that they're out of your reach. You can be more confident in interviews because you know you can do a good job at something you had no idea how to do it when you started, because no one ever does. I mean, when I go into Starbucks, I always think their job looks really easy. I'm like, I could do that. I've watched enough people. I could do that. And I bet you if I worked in Starbucks, I'd be like 10 minutes and I'd no idea what was going on, you know? And if you learn to be a really good barista in Starbucks, then you have learned a whole bunch of skills and you can be confident that you have the ability to learn skills and to perfect them.
Absolutely. Not to mention that your manager at Starbucks might be the brother-in-law who is a VP at the software development company that you want to work for when you get out of school.
Exactly. The guy that owns the nearest Starbucks to me owns 10. Now, the managers might not ever be anything than managers at Starbucks. That might be their ambition. But I guarantee as an entrepreneur who owns 10 Starbucks, he's got friends.
Absolutely.
And he's in those Starbucks all the time. So working in college, as long as you keep your grades high, is really valuable experience. And it might even be better if the jobs are boring and simple and customer service, which is never fun, and you have uncaring co-workers and jobs that you really hope you never do again, because there's something really valuable about learning to be a good employee when the circumstances are against you. And like Danny said, she did 2.5 hours of boring stuff yesterday, and somewhere when she was bussing tables or taking orders, there were days when she didn't want to do that. And learning how to get through that I don't wanna is really, really valuable. And if you can be professional and successful in those kind of jobs, you can be professional and successful anywhere.
And if nothing else, as my mom always said to me during every job I had when I was in college that I hated, well, just use that as more motivation to do well in school so that you don't have to do that job for the rest of your life.
Excellent mom guidance there.
All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back next week.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want, with easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions. It couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're a Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.